Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Now to a man who will, for us on Open House, unlock one of the great secrets of the ages. It's a question I have no doubt many parents have earnestly yearned to have answered, sometimes probably despaired at. It's this: how do I understand my kids, especially when teenagerhood slams up into everybody's faces? There's also the somewhat related issue of discipline. Who rules the roost around here, kids or parents? Well, Dr. Justin Colson is a parenting author and founder of happyfamilies.com.au. He's a regular on the project, the Today Show, and is the resident parenting expert on KidsSpot and News Limited websites. And I'm so glad he's returning to Open House to deal with these two huge issues: how do I understand my kids and discipline. Justin, welcome back.
So good to be here. Thanks for having me, Lee.
Great to see you. Thanks so much for coming in. Let's start with some of the family dynamics you've encountered in your practice with parents and children. When do you reckon this gap starts to open up in understanding between parent and child?
Well, what happens when our children are born is we're so excited about having them there. And when they start to cry, when they're infants, when they're brand new babies, we attend to their every peep. We're right there. We don't want them to feel any pain. We don't want them to be wet. We don't want them to be hungry. We're so attentive and we're so attuned to those emotions. And if they fall over as they start to crawl and walk, we run straight over to them and we pick them up and we put them on our shoulder and we say, there, it's okay. That hurt, didn't it? Yeah. And we're so full of empathy and we're so full of compassion for them. They're just so beautiful and we want to do everything we can to love them. And something starts to happen once they turn around about two, maybe three, and they start to develop a bit of a will of their own.
Yes.
They start to push our boundaries. They learn how to open up the cupboards and pull the drawers out and throw all the clothes on the floor and bang the saucepans. And they start to say no when we ask them to do something because they want something. And around about that time is when we sort of stop understanding them. It's about that time where we sort of go, well, hang on. No. I'm the parent. It's my agenda. You don't say no to me. And until that point, they haven't been able to say no. They've just gone with whatever we've said. And then, of course, they get to two and a half or three, and we try to put them in the car seat, and they don't want to go in the car. And so they're arching their back, and they're screaming. They're having a total meltdown. Or you're in the shopping center, and they really want that bag of chips open. And you say, no, we haven't paid for that, or we're not buying any treats today. And next thing you know, they're all arms and legs on the floor doing the spinning fly on the floors kind of thing. And so that's when the gap starts. We stop trying to see things from their perspective because they're big enough now to walk and talk, and they're becoming a little bit independent. And as parents, we make the mistake, and it is a mistake, of thinking, well, if you're walking and talking, then you can understand and you can do as you're told.
So how early can a parent address this problem or be prepared for that gap in understanding to open up?
What this comes down to is mum and dad being aware that their child is going to start to develop differences of opinion. Yes. And that they're going to start at that age, and then making a conscious commitment that they're still going to be attuned to their children's emotions. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to say, well, my child's having a meltdown, so therefore I have to give my child whatever he or she wants. We need to set limits with our kids, but there are positive and productive ways of doing it, and then there are less effective ways of doing it. The most wonderful thing that we can do is we can see the world through their eyes. When we do that, we can still set limits, but we can do it in a way where we feel good about it and they understand.
I've heard people say this is, in a way, all about kids pushing boundaries to know, in a way, how safe they are, where those boundaries are. Is that right?
I've heard that many times, and I think that that's probably true. Kids need boundaries. The research in psychology and in child development is really clear. Children without boundaries do not do well. In fact, they generally turn to lots of negative influences and make lots of poor choices. So they need mum and dad to be firm. And the research is clear on that. We've got to have clear limits. But what the research is also really clear on is that they need mum and dad to be warm and compassionate.
Okay.
And that's the thing that most parents find really difficult, because a lot of parents think, well, if I'm being warm and compassionate, that means that I'm being permissive and I'm letting them get away with whatever they want.
I'm being a softie.
Yeah. And no one wants to be a soft touch. And, of course, everyone gets in trouble because, you know, that's the problem with the world these days is kids don't have enough discipline. If you listen to enough certain talkback radio or whatever it might be.
Which we'll get to.
But at the other end of the scale, if you've got the pendulum of softness at one end and strictness at the other, a lot of parents say, well, look, I'll be patient and I'll be soft and I'll be kind and I'll wait, and they'll just keep on playing up and playing up until the pendulum swings to the other end where I just say,
yes,
that's it, I've had enough, and then we start going crazy and we get really strict and we clamp down on them and say, you kids don't have enough discipline. But what we're actually missing is that when we're being soft in that instance, we're actually not setting limits. We're letting them get away with everything. We're being permissive. Permissiveness doesn't work with kids, but nor does being heavily authoritarian.
So you can still be warm with a kid without being soft necessarily.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and pushover.
I'll give you a really simple example of this.
Yeah.
You can say to your child when they're saying, but I really want it, but I really, really want it, and they're going crazy, you can say, I know you really want it. It would be wonderful if you could have it, but unfortunately today you can't have it. But you can have a hug. And you can have this instead. You know, we can give them alternatives, and we can be soft and we can be kind, but we can be firm.
I don't want a hug. So what do you say then?
Oh, well, that's okay. When you feel like one, I'm right here.
Yeah. And that will get through, I suspect.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, it'll plant a seed. It's inevitable, though, that by the time a child hits teens, that's when, in addition to all this stuff, the emotions, the hormones start raging.
Yeah, there's a few things that happen. So research is pretty clear on this. The two toughest times for parents are when their kids are toddlers and when they're teens. Okay. At both times, we're seeing enormous, I just call it a brain explosion. But the brain development that's going on at those two critical periods is simply staggering. During those toddler years, they're starting to develop the capacity to make up their own mind. They're starting to want things. They don't see things from another person's perspective until about 4.5 or 5 years old. So when we say no to them at that age, what they hear is, the person who's supposed to love me more than anyone in the world, the person who cares for me, is not letting me have what I want. How can they not want what I want?
Yes.
They're so egocentric. They're completely ego-driven, and they don't get it. So there's a lot of change and development going on neurologically when we've got toddlers. By about 4.5, 5 years old, that starts to settle down. And research tells us that by the time they're about 5 or 6, maybe 7 years old, they get into that what we call the golden age of childhood. Everything's really nice. They understand their social world. They understand cognitively things have calmed down. They're starting to understand how school works. They've settled into routines. They've got friends. They know what the limits and boundaries are at home. And life kind of gets a lot easier through that middle childhood phase. And then somewhere between 10 and 14, depending on how early your child develops, another explosion happens, not just in the brain this time, but throughout the whole body.
Yes.
And so all of a sudden, brain development's going crazy, and two important areas are being developed in a significant way. The first one is what we call the prefrontal cortex. That's the bit right above your eyes, behind your forehead, right at the front of your brain there. That is the part of the brain that's responsible for what we call executive function. We're talking here about planning, thinking ahead, considering consequences. Teenagers don't do that stuff because that part of the brain is only just starting to develop properly. And the other part that's critical at this time is right sort of in the middle of the brain, down underneath the cortical layers, it's something called the limbic system, L-I-M-B-I-C, limbic system. And the limbic system is kind of the emotional heart of the brain. It's the emotional center. And through the developing aspects of the limbic system, what happens with our kids there is they get an idea, they get excited about it, and because their emotional brain is on fire, going absolutely berserk with all this development, they say, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's go and do that really dumb thing. And their prefrontal cortex is saying, well, I just need about another 6 years to finish developing so I can think this through properly.
Wow.
And it's kind of like driving a Ferrari down a hill with bicycle brakes.
I've never heard it explained like this. It's very interesting.
So, well, yeah, that's what's going on with their development. And that is why parents say, my teenagers, they're just killing me and driving me insane.
Yes. How important are peers in this equation, Justin, at that time of a teenager's life?
What happens as part of normal development is that our children grow up, and the older they get, the less they rely on us and the more they rely on their peers for their values, for their socialization practice, for their time, for their disclosure. One of the hardest things for mums and dads is, you know, when the kids are 2 or 5 or even 8, they just tell mum and dad everything. But by the time they get to 10 or 12, they start having these little things where they just don't want mum and dad to know what's going on. And mum and dad are going, but I just want to know.
Like it used to be.
Yeah. And we want that closeness. And the kids are sort of naturally moving away from that closeness. And that's normal. It's sort of sad in a lot of ways, but it's normal. And it's just important that we keep the communication channels open and we keep the relationship warm so they know they can always return to us as a secure base.
Yes. So communication's key. If you step back from the whole thing, though, and said, okay, so how do I understand my kids? What would you say? What's at the heart of it?
I think that it's really about having the mindset that you want to understand them. It's about empathy. Let me give you a quick example that happened in my home the other night. I'm a father of 5 kids. My wife's pregnant. We're expecting our 6th child.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And so things are a bit intense at the moment because my wife's gone through about 10 weeks of the worst morning sickness that we've ever experienced. And it's not just morning, it's all day and all night. And you know, she just feels awful. And so I've been trying to run a business, run a home, look after 5 kids and do everything that's associated with that. A few weeks ago, I was laying down next to my toddler. I just read her a story and sung her a song. And we'd said a little prayer, and she wanted me to lay with her for a couple of minutes and sort of pat her off to sleep. Now, she's only 3 years old. I'm delighted to do that. It's a really nice time of the night.
Yes.
But just outside her bedroom door, her 11-year-old sister was going nuts, having a big fight with her 9-year-old sister, and there was all sorts of rah kind of stuff. And I was laying there going, oh, you know. And this is the interesting thing. Our natural parenting responses, Lee, the things that we naturally want to do when our kids are annoying us, are more often than not exactly the opposite to what we need to do. Natural responses are typically the worst thing that we can do because we're focused on our agenda. We're not seeing the world through their eyes. And so I, after a few minutes of this with my toddler not going to sleep, I jumped out of bed and I ran out the door and I looked at my 11-year-old, my 9-year-old, and I said, this has got to stop. And then I bit my tongue so I didn't say anything else and I just looked at them.
How disciplined.
Oh, and I said, I'm trying to put your sister to sleep and you're not helping me.
Wow.
And I wanted to say more, but I stopped. And my 11-year-old looked at me. And fortunately, because we communicate a lot in our home and we talk a lot about our feelings, instead of running into a room and crying, she looked at me and she said, I'm sorry, Dad, but I've had a really bad day at school. 2 of my friends aren't my friends anymore. People are talking about me behind my back. I've come home. I don't know how to do my homework. My sister has been picking on me and she won't let me do this and I can't get in my room and it's a mess and blah, 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 blah.
Wow.
And I'm just having a bad day. Now, that's unusual. A lot of kids won't do that. But because we've practiced a lot in our home about talking about our feelings, she was able to do that. The great thing is as she started to list the dramas that she'd had that day, I looked at her and I saw her differently. She was no longer this obstacle, this problem.
Trouble.
She was no longer this issue that was getting in my way of putting the toddler to sleep. She was a real person with real feelings and she was hurting. And so I stopped the anger that I had, you know, the resentment, the annoyance that I had building inside me. Instantly it evaporated and I was able to look at her and say, you know what? I'm going to be with you in about 3 minutes. Your sister needs me for another minute and then we'll spend some time talking about your awful day.
Yeah.
And I think that it's that, I call it charity. That's what Paul calls it. I call it charity or Christ-like love. It's the ability, at the core of charity, it's the ability to see the world through somebody else's eyes. It's the ability to have true empathy and feel what they're feeling. And I believe that that is the heart of parenting. If we want to be great parents, we can still set firm limits. We can still discipline our children. Discipline, don't forget, it doesn't mean that we punish people. Discipline means we teach them good ways to act. We can, in fact, research tells us that our discipline will be far better when people feel our love because they're more likely to learn from us. They're willing to be taught when they know that we love them. And our children, more than anyone, need to know that they're loved before they're going to be responsive to our discipline, our teaching.
Even in the heat of the moment.
Especially in the heat of the moment.
Let's talk about discipline. Who's in charge around here? It's especially tricky when kids hit teens. Perhaps we should start off with a definition. What do you say discipline is?
Well, this is an interesting thing. When I run my workshops in schools, preschools, churches, wherever it might be, parenting groups, I love to ask people the question, what is discipline? And it's incredible the array of responses that I get. Here's how I define it. It's not about punishment, because punishment is about hurting somebody. Punishment's about doing something negative to somebody because they did something you don't like or because they didn't do something that you wanted them to do. Research tells us punishment is not a particularly effective teacher, especially of children, okay. especially when emotions are involved. So discipline to me is teaching our children good ways to act. It's about teaching. It's not about punishing. It's not about sending somebody to the naughty chair. It's not about taking privileges away. It's about teaching.
What about time out?
Time out's not your only option, and I would argue that time out is not a good option at all. We use time out in my house from time to time. Normally I'll say to my children, I'm really upset right now and I'm sending myself to my room until I can behave myself and act like an adult, because right now I'm not doing a very good job of it. I tend not to use timeout on the children. I don't like it. It doesn't do anything. You know what timeout does for children? It promotes resentment. You've got a teenage daughter who's been obnoxious, who's doing the wrong thing, and you say, that's it, I've had enough. Go to your bedroom for 10 minutes and calm down. And
good luck with that one.
Well, she might go to a bedroom if you're lucky.
Yeah.
But she's not going to sit there and think about all the ways that she could behave better in the family. She's not going to think about how she can be a better contributor. She's going to sit there and seethe.
So what would you do as an alternative to time out?
As an alternative to time out, there are so many. Mm. This is the interesting thing. When it comes to parenting, we think that the only way to teach is to punish. We think that the only thing is to stick them in the corner or stick them in their room or stick them in the laundry or whatever. And I will just say, sometimes we do need to get out of the situation for a bit. If emotions are too high, there's not going to be anything productive happen. So sometimes we need to calm down. And I believe that timeout can be used for calming down, but not for discipline,
okay.
just for calming down. Once things are calm enough, it's about just having really normal conversations. But I think that the best thing to do, depending on the age of the child, is to have conversations where the child does most of the talking. So let me ask you, Lee, if you're having a hard time with your kids and they've done something that they probably know that they shouldn't be doing, and you definitely know that they shouldn't be doing.
Yep.
Have you ever stood there and pointed the finger and said, I don't know how many times I've told you this. When you do this, it disrupts the family. It affects your grades. It affects your friends. And it does this and blah, blah, blah. And off we just rant and
it's
rave.
It's my rant, yes.
And you know what kids hear? Blah, 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 blah. Rah, rah, rah. And they don't
Whatever.
Listen. Whatever.
Yeah.
What I recommend instead is that we see the world through their eyes. How are they going to feel right now while this person who's twice their size and who knows a lot more than them, even though they don't believe that, but how are they going to feel if we just talk at them? They're going to roll their eyes and be bored and just do whatever it takes to get out of there. So I recommend, when we're talking about teenagers at least, that we ask a lot of questions.
Okay, yes.
So we can say, we had a bit of an issue before. What happened there? What upset you so much?
And you need a lot of communication skills from very early in their lives to be able to be there and get there.
Yeah, great point. You know, I had a conversation with somebody just yesterday who was telling me about some friends. We were talking about parenting. And these friends pretty much said when their children were about 7 and 10, our kids are great. I don't know why you, speaking about my friend, I don't know why you're investing all this time in learning about parenting. Because, you know, the kids are great, but they didn't realize that 7 to 10 is a really golden age. And by
ready.
The time their kids were, at the moment, they've got an 18-year-old and a 20-year-old. The 18-year-old's dealing with some very significant mental health issues, and the 20-year-old's causing them all sorts of grief because they didn't try to understand what mattered. And so while things were easy, they were a bit like, you know, the ant and the grasshopper. The grasshopper in Aesop's fable sits back and says, look, everything's cruisy, sun's shining, life's good. Didn't really invest in the relationship enough. So once the kids became teenagers, they didn't know what to do then.
Mm.
They were relying on stuff that they, you know, relying on power that they'd used when the kids were younger. It doesn't work once the kids get to be teenagers.
Yeah. Discipline always seems like such a reactive thing.
Yeah.
Often in the heat of the moment. Is it possible to be proactive with discipline?
The best discipline is always proactive.
Okay.
The best discipline every time is proactive. And let me give you an example of this. If discipline is teaching good ways to act, one of my favorite discipline strategies is to talk about induction. Now, when you start at a workplace, Lee, the first thing that happens is they sit you down and what do?
Yeah.
They walk you through the workplace.
Hopefully.
If it's a good workplace.
Yeah.
They'll walk you around. They show you where everything is. Then they show you what your job is. They show you how to do it. They give you the manual. They give you the policies and procedures. You watch the video. That's induction. And you get taught. Now, let me ask you a question. Once you've been through that 3 hours of induction or 3 days of induction, Are you ready to go? Have you got everything sorted?
Good question. No.
No. You know, usually you've got a lot more questions, yes. A lot more challenges as work goes along and you become more familiar with the environment. And it's exactly the same thing with our kids. If we really want to make sure that they're going to be disciplined, we need to be proactive. So we need to induct them. A study just came out in the last couple of weeks that talks about how slowly our children learn. They don't pick stuff up as fast as we do. We can hear things and retain it. We accommodate it in our brain and we're ready to go with it.
It's a very good point to make. Yeah.
How long does it take for a child to learn to tie shoelaces? Mm. How long does it take for a child to learn how to use a knife and fork? How long does it take for a child to learn how to share or how to engage appropriately socially? Kids take a long time to learn and they need to be told, you know that saying, if I've told you once, I've told you 1,000 times.
It's probably true.
Sometimes kids need to be told 1,000 times.
Yeah.
And we can do it one of two ways. We can do it by shouting out and saying, how many times have I told you you've got to do it like this? Or we can say, let me show you how to do that again.
With warmth.
With warmth. You're going to get the same result either way in terms of the task being completed. But one way, everyone's going to feel good. And the other way, everyone's going to go, this is not a nice place to be. I don't like this family at all.
Every time I talk to people like you, I think, oh, turn back time 25 years. I'd give it another go. Can I just ask you finally, is there a case study you can recall in your own experience, maybe in your own life, where someone has moved to a better place with discipline in their home? And how did that happen?
Yeah, for sure. I have a lot of parenting coaching clients and I could probably tell you countless stories from them.
Yes, I'm sure.
But let me share one that just popped into my head with my daughter, my 14-year-old daughter, teens and technology. Bit of an issue for a lot of parents.
Yes, yeah,
you're too right. Would you just put that device down and leave it alone?
Those devices,
yes. Yeah. So we were having some issues with her telephone. She was on it all the time and she wasn't following the rules that we'd proactively established. We'd been through the induction. We talked about why it was important. She wasn't following the rules. And so after more warnings than she probably needed, I invited her to give me the telephone because her time was up. She was not allowed to have the phone anymore. I don't like this idea of consequences, but ultimately she can't have the phone unless she's willing to play by the rules.
Yes.
So she handed over the phone with cranky face sort of stuff.
There's an achievement in itself.
I was going to get into the room at midnight by stealth and find it if I had to, but she gave me the telephone and I said, you can have this back when we have had a proper conversation about our rules, but not just me telling you what the rules are, but about why the rules exist.
Yep.
And so she said, well, I'd like the phone back now. I said, great, let's do that. I said, why do I not want you to use the phone too much? The conversation, Lee, took about 4 weeks.
Wow.
Because she would get defensive, she'd get stroppy, and she'd stop talking about it. And I'd say, well, look, as soon as we finish the conversation, you can have the phone, but right now you're clearly not ready to finish this conversation.
So she went without the phone for 4 weeks.
That's right.
Wow.
I held onto the phone and I said, as soon as we get this conversation done, whether it takes 4 minutes or 4 years, you can have the phone back. And she would sit down and she'd start to have the conversation with me, but she'd get too cranky. And I'd say, you know, in our home, we speak softly and kindly and with respect. And at the moment, I'm not getting that. So the conversation's over. If you want to come back in 2 minutes when you've calmed down, that's fine. Or 2 weeks, it's up to you.
Wow.
So setting the limit, but being kind and firm. Now, she was angry with me, but she couldn't be too angry because I wasn't giving her anything to fight with. And finally, over about 4 weeks, we talked about my concerns in relation to addiction and obsession with the phone. We talked about my concerns with internet safety and the content that could be found on the phone. We talked about my concerns around schoolwork, social life, being outside and playing and doing fitness sort of stuff rather than playing with a device. We covered it all. There was about 10 or 12 things that I was concerned about, missing out on sleep, being up late texting, having phones in the bedroom, all that sort of stuff. And finally, we got to a point where I said, we're almost finished this. We've just got to establish some rules now and then you can have the phone back because I know that you understand. It's taken 4 weeks, but I know you understand. Mm-hmm. And I said, why has it taken us this long to get to this point? She was quiet for a few minutes and I thought, oh, well, the conversation's going to start again tomorrow. And then she looked up and she said, because I know that you're right.
Wow, for a 14-year-old girl.
Powerful moment.
Yes.
Really, really powerful moment. But it took 4 weeks to get there, 4 weeks of patience and compassion and understanding and kindness, but being firm with that limit. You can have it back when we've finished the conversation.
Did she feel disempowered through that?
No, because she had to come up with the answers.
Okay.
The whole idea was, I want you to have, and I made it clear, I want you to have the phone. It's more convenient for everyone for you to have the phone. You're happier when you have the phone. We're happier when you've got the phone. Life is better when you've got it. I want you to have it. It was never about punishment. It was always about, I just need you to be taught. And so I kept on saying, tell me more about why I'm concerned. Okay, you're worried about, I'm worried about sleep. Why? Tell me why you need more sleep. How much do you need? Why is that important? What will it affect if you don't get enough? So lots of questions, lots of long conversations until, you know, why am I worried about addiction and obsession? Why am I worried about the on-screen content? She had to give me the answers. Then I knew she'd learnt. She got the phone back and she acknowledged that I was right. And let me tell you, it's been a while now, and every now and again I have to give her a little reminder.
Yes.
What are the rules? Remember those rules?
Yep.
And that's it. Because the answers are inside her now. They're not me just saying blah, blah, blah at her. Now, that's empathy. It's limits. It's discipline.
Yeah. Wonderful advice. I'm so glad you've come in again. I could talk all night about this kind of stuff. And I'm sure you've been a great help to many who've been listening tonight. Justin Colson, thank you so much indeed for joining us on Open House. Justin's got an e-book out called Time Out is Not Your Only Option. We'll put the details up on our Open House community Facebook page. Justin, thanks so much.
Lee, thanks. It's been so much fun.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.